It's so hard for me to sit back here in this studio looking at a guy out here hollering my name when last year I spent more money on spilled liquor in bars from one side of this world to the other than you made. You're talking to the Rolex wearing, diamond ring wearing, kiss stealing, woo, wheeling dealing, limousine riding, jet flying, son of a gun, and I'm having a hard time holding these alligators down. Woo!
To all hustlers with the same interests. Bow your heads as the Lord's mentioned.
Welcome to a special edition of Bauer and Pollock. What's so special about it? Nothing. But it's both of us here another week to chat about news. Court, how are you as we head into the long weekend, which is bookended by our respective countries celebrating birth? It is Canada Day on Friday and Independence Day on Monday. Are you excited?
Well, yeah. Now that I learned what the slogan is for Canada Day, I had no idea.
That's it. We are a very celebratory country, and we celebrate on July 1st every year. And what does that mean? That means we get a rare holiday in this country.
You guys don't get many holidays?
We probably get the exact same amount as you.
Oh.
So that's definitely an exaggeration on our part.
Is Halloween the same date as down here in the States, or is it like in like April?
No, it is the same day as you guys.
Oh.
The big discrepancy is Thanksgiving. We celebrate Thanksgiving mid-October. You guys wait until third week of November. I don't know why that is.
Don't get hot about it. I don't know either.
Yes. Well, we have different times of the year that we give thanks.
Yeah, well.
I am not requesting anybody contact me with a history of Thanksgiving. I flat out don't care. And I know a lot of you out there,
wow,
you just love to contact us with some of the most random pieces of information that my brain just has no interest in occupying any space with.
Holy shit. Well, that's quite a festive send-off for our first
Court,
if
I was to pull up the history of Thanksgiving in Canada and then the history of Thanksgiving in the U.S., would you love to hear me read that to you?
Well, I don't know. It could be really interesting. I don't know why you guys would celebrate like 8 weeks before us, but I might want to know. I don't want to be ignorant to these things. I want to learn.
Well, why don't you do some research for us over the next week?
Wow.
And then we'll make a turkey next week, and we will go over the history of Thanksgiving. Can that be the next history in the making?
Yeah, I'll give you
Thanksgiving.
Stuff. Listen, enough of your bitterness over these holidays and people actually trying to share some knowledge with you.
Wait, I want to ruin The Conjuring 2 as well. Have you watched it?
No, I haven't had a chance yet.
Well, you will not guess how this thing ends.
I'm assuming something with a turkey now.
No.
A pilgrim?
But there is a crooked man in this movie.
Well, there's many crooked men in pro wrestling. Nice segue, right? 5 points.
How have you not seen it yet? I thought I was really lacking in urgency when it came to seeing this movie. I was gonna go opening night, but I could not go see it until this past weekend.
Here's the thing. I have one friend named Nick, and Nick's job is to go to the movies that all my other friends and my wife will not go to, and they're movies that aren't appropriate for my kids. Nick went into business for himself and saw The Conjuring 2 without me. I've been betrayed. And so because of that, it has set off a sequence of events where I'm trying to see this movie with other people, but no one really is a horror fan, and my wife isn't a horror fan, but I think she might do it because she just is going to – she's just sad that I can't see it, showing me some pity here. So I'm still trying to negotiate something. I'll probably have to work out a barter deal or something with her to go see this movie because she's not a horror fan. But I want her to see the first one. So that's actually what we're going to try doing this weekend because why not? It's 4th of July. We'll watch the first Conjuring, and if that goes well, we'll watch maybe go to the theaters and check out the sequel. We're also going to finally check out Batman versus Superman, which is now available on demand for those that probably want to subject themselves to a subpar outing in the superhero genre. But I haven't seen it yet, so maybe it's awesome and people just been nailing it for no reason. But I think it's going to be a rough outing. Have you seen it?
No, I have not seen Batman versus Superman. I actually just watched Deadpool for the first time over the weekend, and I found that to be a great movie. I thought Ryan Reynolds was tremendous in that movie.
You know, it's so funny, though. It's like, you really can't let kids see that movie. Like, once in a while, maybe you'll let, you know, let a kid see, like, I'll let my son see something. Maybe it's a little borderline, but if I'm there, it's okay, because I can cover up the eyes or ears or whatever. But there's that, and then there's stuff that happens in Deadpool. I'm like, yeah, we can't see this for a while. But it's a great movie as well, a fun movie. And it's right now, there's like so many superhero movies and stuff, and it's hard to break out and do something different. But Deadpool, the tone and everything, so different than any superhero movie I've seen in a long time for Ryan Reynolds. It really helped his career too. So I actually saw it in a hotel room the night before producing a show for UFC Fight Pass. There was nothing going on, and I was out at the airport, and there was no way to get in to see anyone in LA that night. So I was like, I'll just sit back and watch Deadpool. I loved it.
Yeah, everyone was talking about when it first came out about, man, who could have been better than Ryan Reynolds to play this character? And there's so few, like, he made that role to me. He was great. I think the only person, if they had a father for Ryan Reynolds in a future sequel, would there be anyone better to be Deadpool's father than Jack Nicholson?
Yeah, I don't know if there's anyone in the comics, because I don't know the Deadpool comic, if he'd has a father.
Neither do I.
But it's too bad. I think Jack Nicholson's done with movies. I think he's officially retired.
Yeah, he just goes to basketball games now. I think that's it.
Dude, if that's not a bad retirement. Lakers aren't so hot right now. So I guess there are better ways to use your retirement. But still, there's no one better.
I just saw an interview with Jack Nicholson. He was on Jim Lampley's HBO show, The Fight Game, discussing Muhammad Ali a few weeks ago. First time I had seen Jack Nicholson in forever.
Why is he the authority on Ali? Everyone's like just talking about Ali.
He was really good. He was good friends with the
Everyone was good friends now, if you look back. Everyone's claiming they're like really good friends with the guy. Have you read the new Josh Gross Ali book?
I read the entire thing, and I had Josh Gross on the MMA
Report.
Oh,
that's right. We plugged it. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, thanks for listening. The book was great, though. It was really, really well done. And Josh is not a follower of professional wrestling, and I think that added to the book, because he's approaching it from kind of an outsider perspective to set up the context in professional wrestling, establishing that link. Because to tell the story of this fight, you essentially have to put into context Muhammad Ali and who he was in 1976, who Antonio Inoki was, period, to many readers of this book that don't understand the significance of Inoki in Japan. And with that, you also have to set up the history of Japanese pro wrestling up until that point, as well as what came out of it in terms of mixed martial arts in Japan. And it's fascinating when you have this whole web that comes together for this fight in June of 1976. And he also interviewed a lot of different MMA reporters who were very young at the time and watching that fight on closed circuit in the U.S. And it's really interesting to hear their recollections of a fight that was largely panned by people as just being awful at the time. And it's much more significant in a historical context than it was when it occurred.
Do you think Inoki will ever come back to New Japan in any way? Not like, well, anyway, from on air to something ringside to behind the scenes, or is he done and just never going to be allowed back or offered the opportunity?
I think he's pretty much severed his ties with New Japan. As much as he is linked to the formation and growth of that company, I think he's so distanced at this point that I don't really see him ever being brought in any kind of a capacity. I think they've almost established like a completely different entity of what today's New Japan is versus Inoki's vision at the time, which, I mean, for all the good he did, he did a lot of bad for New Japan too, and almost sunk that.
I mean, like, you'd say the bad was in the 2000s or late 90s.
Sure.
It started. And I could see that for sure. But I still identify so much of what New Japan is with Inoki at its core. I mean, he really, it's weird to explain in the United States, because it'd be like the McMahons without WWF, WWE. I mean, he really was a lot for a long time, the heart and soul, and would like make the guys, and was the face of the company. I can't even compare it to WWE. It's totally different in a lot of ways. But still, it's I look at where the company's gone and how it's modernized in recent years, and have now faced a really interesting challenge with the transition from Shinsuke Nakamura, the Bullet Club guys, AJ, all leaving to what they are evolving into. And it's the new management, the new leadership behind New Japan has done a great job. And a lot of people, I think, when you buy a company, they're so skeptical. Oh, those guys, they're not going to have a chance. This thing's screwed. They've really turned this around.
Yeah, you look at everything, they certainly are not at the level of popularity they once were,
oh,
but it's something that, I mean, in terms of visibility in North America, I don't think it's ever been higher just because of the accessibility now to follow along. I don't think that they necessarily could come over here and fill a major arena, but I mean, just technology has very much benefited New Japan in the sense that I think there's more of a worldwide awareness than ever before for the promotion.
I don't know. That's a good question, because when WCW and that partnership, they got a lot of exposure. Even as early as the 1991 Super Show, there was a lot of good exposure. And that's when I first learned about a concept known as Japanese wrestling and New Japan wrestling, and that these guys are drawing bigger shows or bigger cards and bigger box offices than WCW and WWF in 91. Blew me away to see the Steiners walking out on that ramp and Sting, and seeing these guys that are like, oh, I'm not really interested, no, whatever, and then see these guys just do amazing things in there, especially Jushin Liger, who was in his prime, Great Muda, Masachono, so many great guys. That was an amazing era. I think that planted the seed for a lot of people. Now, there's different access, but I don't know if the exposure overall is anywhere close to what that was at that point.
Yeah, you don't have a platform like you did with WCW and being on a major cable network, but I would say in terms of accessibility of New Japan's own product, I mean, you might have been able to be exposed to a Fujinami or a Great Muda, but following that New Japan product, that took a lot of legwork on your part to be able to track down those tapes, where it was very primitive in that form as compared to today, where geez, if you can navigate that New Japan World site, you're all locked in. You can get every G1 card this year. That's crazy. That's crazy 5 years ago, if you were to be told that.
Well, I mean, look at what the price was just 2 years ago. 2014 G1 was over $100 to get everything over the course of whatever it was, 20 days. And now it's pennies on the dollar compared to what you paid 2 years ago on Ustream. Remember when Ustream was a big thing? Now no one talks about Ustream. That's how quick technology changes.
Oh, the good old Ustream days. And then they had that in-between period before New Japan World launch, and I can't even remember what the video site was. That was just a pain in the ass to try and navigate. But looking at the lineup for the G1, which was announced earlier this week, we've got in the A block Kazuchika Okada, Hiroshi Tanahashi, Togi Makabe, Satoshi Kojima, Haruki Goto, Tomohiro Ishii, Tama Tonga, Bad Luck Fale, Seiya Sanada, and now Michi Marufuji. And then in the B block, we have Tetsuya Naito, Katsuyori Shibata, Michael Elgin, Kenny Omega, Yuji Nagata, Toru Yano, Tomoaki Honma, Yoshihashi, and Katsuhiko Nakajima. So a lot of fresh faces in this G1 with all of the departures earlier this year. No Hiroyoshi Tenzan in this year's tournament, though Kojima is part of it. So there was a lot of turnover. So with that, you do get some very fresh matches. I think the additions of Marufuji and Nakajima are great. Toru Yano finds himself back in this tournament. I'm not exactly sure why, although
why not?
he's there to be Toru Yano and essentially lose most matches and probably have two upsets. But this lineup, though, Court, it looks very solid just from an in-ring standpoint, and in particular, the fact that Tanahashi and Okada, a match they did not want to go back to so soon, you will get that on one of the final nights at Sumo Hall in the A block.
Right, and it's interesting also to note that this is a tournament that has virtually no Americans. I mean, Tama Tonga, of course, technically American, but he's quote-unquote from Tonga. But other than that, I mean, look at in past years, you had such a heavy American presence for years. And this one, the focus is on primarily native talent, Japanese talent.
Hey, don't you dare discredit two Canadian representatives in Michael Elgin and Kenny Omega.
True. But if you look at just in terms of the native population, there's a lot on that G1. That's a good opportunity to see how those Noah guys mix in there. Some are people are questioning the validity or how – not validity, but what they can actually contribute. And I think these guys are going to really tear it up. I maybe I'm being an optimist, but I think this is going to be a fun tournament, a different tournament. So with the transitional phase going on here, you don't have those guys that were a part of it for the last 2 or 3 years, but now you have a fresh – complexion, because, and that's great when you're matchmaking and putting these matches together so you're not getting that repetitiveness. It's a great opportunity. I hope they make someone. Who do you think is a breakout star possibly coming out of this?
I think that this tournament, while I don't think he's going to win the tournament by any stretch and maybe not even be a player towards the end, I do think this is a great opportunity for Sonata to really cement his place. I think he's come back. He hasn't had that really breakout performance, and having a lot of new fresh matchups in that A block, you can't help but have some incredible matches that he'll have with Okada, with Tanahashi, Marufuji, Makabe. I mean, Ishii. It's a stellar A block. So I look at Seiya Sonata as someone that could have a real breakout. Marufuji, I'm looking forward to a lot of those matches. I feel that Naito is probably the favorite in this tournament. Every year we look at Shibata, is this going to be the year that he's put into a real big spot in the G1? And he's always come up short. But this year, this is a big year about making guys, and that's kind of the B block for you. You have Shibata, Elgin, Omega, who I have all at that level where they're not top guys yet, but they're kind of right on the cusp there. Naito would be the favorite. And then you have, you know, Hanma, who's going to have his usual fun performances. Nakajima's a bit of a wild card in there, but that presents a lot of fresh matches. Yoshihashi and Toriano, they're just kind of there for me. I know they've put more emphasis on Yoshihashi of late, but those two don't do a whole lot for me. Right. And then Yuji Nagata, who, I mean, he always usually has a very good tournament, and he's working with some different guys as well here. So I really can't complain about either of these blocks. They each have their own identity, I feel.
Now, explain what the winner gets and the usual setup for January 4th, the annual big Wrestle Kingdom showdown for the championship.
Yeah, well, the winner, and this has been going back years at this point, gets the briefcase for the Wrestle Kingdom shot. Usually they may defend the briefcase in some of the September, October, November shows. So that's what the winner gets of the tournament. So this is a month long. It starts on July the 18th, wraps up August 14th with three straight nights at Sumo Hall this year. And probably what you'll see in the A block is Okada losing to one or two people, maybe three, and that will set up matches for whether it is the Destruction shows, the King of Pro Wrestling in October, or Power Struggle. So you'll get a lot of story out of this in terms of establishing a contender for Wrestle Kingdom and setting up some challenges for Okada to take you through the end of the year. So it's a very complex tournament to book because you have to go backwards. You have to bank on no one getting hurt. You have key losses, and you've got to map this thing out to all make mathematical sense at the end of it. So this is a tournament where an injury really can produce a house of cards effect, and everything falls apart. So it's always a really interesting tournament, especially once you get into the latter stages of it, where you're figuring out all the various combinations and where things are going to lead into the final night.
And the last three nights will be at Sumo Hall and will be called with an English commentary squad with Kevin Kelly and Steve Corino calling the play-by-play. And so if you like the New Japan World authentic experience, that's cool, but if you just prefer to hear good old-fashioned English announcing, the last three nights you'll get that on New Japan World, and so look for that. And those three last three nights are probably going to be huge, huge shows.
Now I want to go over to an interview that has got a lot of discussion this week with your former colleague, Stephanie McMahon-Levesque, with Business Insider. And before we discuss her her UFC views, which has gotten the lion's share, I want to read you a quote, Court, because I'm hoping you can translate this for me, you being one that is very well-versed in the language of corporate communications. This, to me, is a special language I like to call Barrios, as in George. Stephanie has asked about their social media channels and about them being advertiser-funded, and these are the words that Stephanie McMahon gave. And because this is written, we cannot confirm or deny if it was in a robotic voice, if this was Stephanie McMahon herself, but These were the words that she used to describe this in a just normal, casual conversation. She said, quote, "We also recognize the value of the share of voice. So we utilize a content ecosystem. And it doesn't matter to us where our fans enter in that ecosystem. We are platform agnostic. We want to be everywhere so our fans can consume our content anytime, any place, anywhere, on any device." She goes on to talk about the talent. "Then we have over 200 different talent IP, which if you ever want to personalize your employees or those that work for you, referring to them as talent IP, what an endearing term."
Yeah, well, that's – I mean, listen, if she was an executive for Disney and you're talking about your IPs, it's Snow White, it's Cinderella, and those are the characters. And in this world, yes, it's a little bit different, yet it is very similar in how you license them and how you speak to people in that space, marketing, licensing. They are IPs. Yes, they are people. Yes, they aren't cartoons, but they serve the same purpose for a company.
They should all have barcodes.
Well, some people have tattoos with barcodes.
Anyway, this was an interesting interview. Obviously, the discussion that was of most interest to people was this unique deal that they have with the UFC to allow Brock Lesnar to compete at UFC 200. And Stephanie stated the fact that she called it a very unique proposition and said, "We are not supporting the fight necessarily, but again, it's not a competitor to us. And the more that our superstars..." That's how we refer to our talent. "The more they do outside of WWE, the more awareness it generates and the broader the audience can be that is then brought back into our properties. So we recognize the value of that." And of course, there's been no mention of this fight on WWE television. Okay. They have announced it on their website that we've gone over. And this seems like something that there's certainly a financial incentive for the WWE in allowing Brock to do this fight. But we'll have to wait and see if there is a... something in return that the UFC delivers back to the WWE. But it was just interesting to hear in her words discussing the UFC and reiterating that point we've heard from the WWE that they don't view the UFC as competitors, and stating the fact that you can build a star in MMA, but after a loss, that credibility disappears, which has not been the case when you trace the historical nature of draws in mixed martial arts once they become stars.
It's actually funny because it made me think of Saki Ibarra and when Pride was in the mix to be acquired by WWE. I mean, I don't know if it was in the mix or if it was evaluated as a possible acquisition for WWE. How's that for corporate speak? And
you've lost me, so congratulations.
Well, let me tell you about my ecosystem.
Are you content agnostic at MLW? Or is it platform agnostic? I want to get this corporate speak correct.
I'm politically agnostic. Anyway, when it comes to, you know, looking at like the philosophy behind putting all the money into fighters and hoping that it works out and not controlling their fate, wrestling does have that over UFC and MMA. And so what you do is you have to retroactively market whoever wins this, and you hope it goes a certain way, but hopefully if you do your matchmaking a certain way, and the UFC is very good at their matchmaking, they do a great job, no matter what happens, you know that there's a few different directions you can take it, and so that's what I mean by retroactively market. You can figure it out and work yourself backwards through it. And I remember Vince at the time just philosophically wasn't eager to sink in a sizable amount of money into an MMA property and not really be in control of the fate of so many variables. And I understood that at the time. I actually saw Saki Ibarra a few weeks ago in New York City, and along with his whole squad, and just talking with him, it was, you know, it was just fascinating just now, you know, being away from those meetings years later. And just discussing, you know, that whole period for him, which now he has a new company out of Japan and they're making moves and stuff. But, you know, it's interesting how different people look at pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. And they are definitely cousins. They share a lot of the same DNA, much more so to me than boxing and MMA or pro wrestling and boxing. But there's definitely some distinct differences and challenges. And for UFC, I think getting Brock for July 9th is a huge get. For WWE, it's a bit of a risk. If he comes out of it and wins, oh, they have something huge to play off of. If he doesn't, they still could maybe do something with it. And I'm sure there's going to be some sort of rights fee associated with that, or not rights fee, but WWE is going to be compensated. They're not just doing this as a solid.
The UFC is actively licensing one of the WWE's IP.
Right. They're getting paid for that. What do you think, by the way, of Brock Lesnar representing your home, your country, Canada?
Saskatchewan, of course. Well, you know, everyone was talking about what is the state of mixed martial arts in Canada. What a giant boost we have gotten. We just found out that Brock Lesnar is ours.
He is
our IP.
He is all yours. And I wonder if he'll be celebrating Canada Day tomorrow.
That's a great question to ask, if he will be in Saskatchewan on Canada Day, no less, perhaps doing some hunting before he will be taking on the man himself, Mr. Mark Hunt.
Mm.
Also, I just want to look at this perspective here. This is what Stephanie said about the differences with WWE and UFC. She said that WWE is all about protagonists and antagonists, where ultimately our conflicts are settled in the ring with action that is akin to Hollywood. It's incredible stunt-like action, and the match itself tells a story. But our audience is engaged in the characters and their storyline. It has to be relatable to them so that they care to see the tragedy or triumph, and we're at an advantage because we can script it.
Right.
And while in theory, yes, having that ability to script things to your liking and the direction you want to take the story, that's a major advantage to professional wrestling. But to just dismiss the idea that the UFC does not have characters and they do not have protagonists and antagonists in how they're viewed by the audience is crazy. If you feel the audience is spending money to see fighter A fighter B, you're out of your mind. Like, the UFC, to me, is every countdown special, every press conference, they are telling stories and they are creating characters that their audience does view as larger than life. And I don't agree with that point at all, that one is these three-dimensional characters that pro wrestling creates versus these nameless fighters. That is how she essentially categorized the differences here.
Well, I also don't think that she probably has a lot of product knowledge of the UFC. I would imagine that's part of it. And she probably thinks that, well, look how we put these people through the star-making machine, our process, because it's scripted and manipulated in that way. I mean, a lot of what she says is it's about the sport, it's a competition, and our thing is totally different. I think she sees that there's more similarities probably with a TV series, a movie where you cast the characters. I think that's more in her interpretation of what the business is and what the WWE business is. I see the merits of what you're saying, but at the same time, that's probably how she is looking at it, for better or for worse.
Well, it's just, to me, I think always the fundamental similarities are that both promotions, their goal is to create characters, mm-hmm. introduce characters
right.
that hopefully the audience has some rooting interest in and will pay money to see them fight or to wrestle. Mm-hmm. That's the goal of both companies. It's very much in presenting individuals that you have some kind of interest in seeing. And at a level next week that you're going to see the UFC do an incredible amount of business on pay-per-view. It's very fascinating, this deal involving the WWE and UFC somewhat in bed together, but clearly the lights are off and no one wants to disrupt this very bizarre series of events.
Well, we'll see how this relationship goes, and if the UFC finds it to be something that they would consider doing again, and if WWE wants to do it again, what do they get out of it? We talked last week about Paige VanZant opting to continue to do her thing and prep for an upcoming fight later in August, then go and do SummerSlam. I'm wondering if Ronda Rousey or anyone else crosses over. I'm sure it's on their radar, and that alone kind of tells you that WWE does see there's some sort of connection between the two.
But wait a minute, Ronda Rousey is coming off a loss, Court. So is her credibility really going to be at a level that would bring any business to the WWE?
Well, we'll see what. I think there's a lot of interesting questions about Ron. I know you're being sarcastic, but at the same time, I'm wondering where we will see Ronda next, and I'm wondering if we will ever see her again in the cage. Maybe we will. Maybe it'll be around Christmas time, maybe New Year's, or maybe we will never see her again. There's a lot of people speculating, and I don't think anyone can say either way definitively until we know when she puts pen to paper on a contract. Same goes for Georges St. Pierre. I wonder where he's going to end up, if he will, because of just the way the business has changed. But daylight's burning on his career, and I'd love to see GSP go back in there. But another to be determined one. One thing I want to bring up is the Honolulu, Hawaii show WWE ran yesterday. And that was one of those shows I was hoping there was going to be Bash at the Beach on the WWE Network, but alas, it did not come to fruition. But they had a pretty stacked show there with a lot of their top talent, including Shinsuke Nakamura wrestling Kevin Owens. And a lot of people claimed it was the match of the night. The crowd was just going crazy for the match. So Shinsuke Nakamura now making his way to the main roster on these house shows. He was at TV's this past week along with Finn Balor, Asuka, and I know I'm forgetting someone else that was at TV this week. That's three of them. Who was the fourth person at TV from NXT?
Was it Aries? Aries did the house show on the weekend in Orlando.
Okay, let's say it's Aries. No one will know.
Well, nonetheless, when you look at – and Nakamura, of course, and Asuka are doing the shows at Sumo Hall this weekend as well. I think it's going to be really telling what this NXT roster looks like after the draft. I mean, all signs point to Nakamura having a pretty significant match at the TakeOver show, and maybe you'll get a bit of a buffer period there if anyone is called up at the draft and kind of does double duty through the end of the TakeOver show. But it seems like you'll get a very different NXT roster come the fall, by September. And I don't think that's a wrong call at all. I think there's many talent in the NXT system that they are better served on the main roster than they are in NXT. NXT is, I mean, you're going to have, I think, a lot of a quicker cycle in terms of talent that is there, and maybe it's 8-month turnarounds before you're needed on the main roster. That's a bigger priority than NXT.
Yeah, and also looking at what that roster is going to look like, Roderick Strong, a very strong possibility, will be on TV before you know it. He's not going to be entering the WWE Performance Center camp in September. He's similar to Austin Aries. He's going to go right to the roster. It's not going to be something where they're going to break him down and build him up. He's going to be there, and he'll be participating in other things. They have a lot of these other classes that they do besides the camp for all the developmental talent from all walks of life. Promo class, one of many examples, but he's someone to watch, as I'm sure he'll be introduced. I would imagine he will be in NXT. Don't know that for a fact, but I would imagine he would be, especially if, say, an Austin Aries gets the call, and rightfully so, to get the call to the main roster. I could see Roderick Strong being a great contributor, guy that could fill that slot. Different type of talent, but really a solid, great get. If in fact we do see him pop up in Orlando. He was with, of course, Seth Rollins on a picture that's popped up out at a gym in Tampa recently. So is it a hint of what's to come? We'll see.
Maybe they ran into each other.
Hey, I'll tell you, I run into a lot of people at my gym. The other day, Campbell McLaren.
Yes, Campbell McLaren, one of the many people that you rub shoulders with on a – rub elbows with on a
– Well, listen – some people rub elbows. We rub shoulders. It's just how we do things.
What a silly term that is. Rubbing shoulders, rubbing elbows. Jeez, no one does that. That's not a literal thing.
No, let me tell you though. I was, when I was shooting this thing for Strikeforce, and we went up to document like New York State not passing or legalizing MMA, we met with a bunch of senators and congressmen and all that shit upstate. And one guy was like really OCD and like was like a super germaphobe. And like someone had like a cold on the production team on our end. So we went to meet with him before shooting. He like, oh, no, I can't shake hands with you. So we literally rubbed elbows. He's like, yeah, let's just rub elbows. So we were like – I was like, how's this?
What?
He extended his arm. He's like, yeah, I'm just rub our elbows. I was like, okay. And then like we all did that because we're meeting with the state official. So you line up, and he walked across each of us and rubbed elbows. I can say I've actually rubbed elbows with politicians, and I actually literally have.
I'm so glad that you had a story to complement our random observation of a weird term. That's awesome. Let's quickly go over, PWG has announced the entrance for this year's Battle of Los Angeles. It's happening September 2nd, 3rd, and 4th this year in Reseda, California, with Cody Rhodes, Kamitachi, Jeff Cobb, who you know as Matanza Cueto on Lucha Underground, Mark Haskins, Dalton Castle, Pete Dunne, Sammy Callahan, Tommy End, Trevor Lee, Adam Cole, John Hennigan, Jack Gallagher, Chris Hero, Mark Andrews, Ricochet, and here's an interesting one, Matt Riddle in the tournament this year. So a lot of new fresh names that they've announced for this year's Battle of Los Angeles.
Should be a good tournament. It always is. And again, another tournament where they shake things up. A lot of new.
Why couldn't Toriano have done this tournament?
There's always next year.
Wow, Toriano would be great in the in Bola.
Yeah, I was actually hoping for some guys from Mexico to pop up in this, but I think they have a different roster this year, and it's a good roster. It's a cool roster, and I am curious to see how this plays out. It's going to be a hot few nights out there in California, but everyone just raves about this. This is one of the most celebrated tournaments here in the States. Now they've been doing this for years, and every year people just are blown away. So I expect the same here. It's a great showcase for the talent. They don't usually get the same booking fee because it's more of like this will drive up their bookings and popularity, this tournament and the PWG matches. So hopefully we'll see I'm sure guys like Matt Riddle, who right now is really building up a name for himself. I wouldn't be surprised if he comes out of this with even a bigger profile. I think he's ready for this. If a year ago, I don't think Matt Riddle would have done anything, but now I think he's ready. I think he's ready for this. So we'll see.
It's going to be interesting, especially over the next 6 to 12 months, when you look at, 16 guys like this here that are doing Bola. What percentage of these performers are probably going to be in the WWE system within the next year? I mean, you look up and down here and I look at people like Dalton Castle. I look at Tommy End that everyone is pegging. Adam Cole. Chris Hero's even an interesting name. Matt Riddle. These are the performers that the WWE has their eyes on. And it's just interesting to see what that trickle down effect is going to be on the PWGs of the world, on your TNAs, your Ring of Honors. Like everyone in the industry is impacted by the WWE's change in philosophy and this brand split where they need to be stocking the shelves, and that includes NXT, that you need a full rotation, and these are those people that they're going to be looking at.
I agree.
Moving on to our next topic. Actually, I didn't even ask you about UFC 200.
Yes.
Do you see this setting the new record for pay-per-view buys for the UFC? If you look at 1.6 million that bought UFC 100, are you going higher or lower for UFC 200?
Oh, we're still too far out, man. That's
we're a week away.
Nah, next. Listen, the final week is where you can really judge the heat for something, the momentum for something. Now it's only June 30th. By July 7th, July 8th, I'll tell you where this thing's at. Right now, it's too early. They haven't even started really hitting the war drums for this bitch yet.
I sense a ton of buzz building for this show. I think that the addition of Brock Lesnar is going to put this thing over the top.
But they haven't rolled up their sleeves and started to really pump this up yet. They're going to start this weekend and go into the following week. But right now, it's like this is the calm before the storm. We'll see how big they can make it. I think it's going to do very well.
Wow. That's definitely pessimism from Court Bauer.
What?
I can tell. I can read you.
Well, we'll see. Next show, I'll make my prediction.
Lucha Underground is winding down. Next week, Ultima Lucha Dos begins. How would you assess this season for Lucha Underground? Season 3 has also wrapped up, so they will be returning in later on this year, I believe it will be, on the El Rey Network. His season 2, we've mentioned it before, they didn't have the ability to have the Spanish language version of Lucha Underground this season. Have they taken a step forward, a step back? Are they in the same spot they were at the end of season 1?
Not as many people are talking about it, but You think they would be if they added some star power. At least you can say they traded star power with ADR leaving and Ray coming in. But I don't sense like any growth right now with the and even interest. I don't. There's a dedicated diehard fan base, but I don't see the growth there. I thought there would be a little bit more at this point with the iTunes deal, which was a great deal. It's how I watch it. It's really awesome. It's very convenient, but I haven't seen that next thing happen for them. If they opt to go with some select touring in the fall, I'll be interested to see how that works. And we should know if they're going to be doing touring relatively soon because the fall is right around the corner, not to be a bummer. But you start planning and booking those buildings, if you know what you're doing, well in advance. And they should probably by now have a pretty good idea of where they want to tour and have those buildings just about ready. And they should be pumping up information about putting tickets on sale. If they don't, then maybe it's for the best, because running tours is not always a viable, profitable scenario for a lot of companies. And I don't know if that would be a step in the right direction right now. Yes, touring is a great idea, but you have to have the platforms to support it. And you have to be careful. They're still in that infancy as a wrestling TV series. They don't want to make all these big risks and don't come out ahead on them.
We also had the news this week. Brock Lesnar is on the cover of the new 2K17 video game. Mm-hmm. So Lesnar and Goldberg feel like those are your main people that you are building this game around. Goldberg, of course, was the big reveal a few weeks back when that trailer was released, and now Lesnar on the cover. It just seems, Court, that with all the discussion about Bill Goldberg, and I actually interviewed him earlier this week. That's going to be airing on The Law Sunday night. I mean, this is a guy that essentially he is – it's not on his end. And these talks with 2K have been going on for years at this point, and it was this year that the WWE gave 2K the green light to use Goldberg. Just seems to make too much sense to use this guy in some capacity for – whether it's a big match. I don't foresee him coming back as any kind of regular performer, but there's business to be done here. Do you not agree?
I think so. When and where, we'll see. They need things to promote for WrestleMania. They need special matches, that novelty factor of bringing back that guy. There's only so many guys you can bring back. There's a lot of question marks. Undertaker's a question mark. Rock is a question mark. You don't know where these guys are going to be, if they're going to participate at all, and you just hope that your core crew stay healthy. But going down to Orlando, it's not the same as going to Dallas and really feeling like you have to sell all these tickets. And look, without a major crazy attraction promoted in advance, they still did very well. You could even argue about the build to WrestleMania being so-so, of course. But I don't know if they're going to have to freak out. I would be interested to see what happens if they decide not to proceed with Bill Goldberg. I guess we saw what happened recently with Kurt Angle, who had gone public on Mark Madden's show talking about his situation with WWE, only for that to be denied, I believe, by WWE. What's your take?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think at this point you've kind of seen this where the WWE, they are not looking to, you know, it was reported very well by Dave Meltzer, just kind of the status of things right now when you've had a series of these issues with the Jerry Lawler story, with Adam Rose. They're not going to be inviting any controversy, which, I mean, when you size things up and you look at Kurt Angle, I mean, there's lots that you could do with a Kurt Angle, even in a very limited capacity in terms of being a physical contributor to your company. Bill Goldberg, on the other hand, I mean, if you have a great idea for this guy, I mean, this guy doesn't bring across any baggage. I don't think any of the fallout is anything that two sides cannot get over when there's money to be made. I mean, essentially, this comes down to it was not a great year on either side's part. I mean, they left with some bad feelings, but realistically, in the grand scheme of things, that Vince McMahon has gotten over, I don't think the Goldberg thing is of any kind of consequence. I just see there being a lot of opportunity there. And with Kurt Angle, I think ultimately he will do something with them, whether it is just simply a Hall of Fame induction, whether it's a cameo. I don't know if he'll ever do a match for the company, but I just can't help that there's going to be sometime when things are low, they need a shot in the arm, and Kurt Angle is one of those guys that does have a following, that does have a history with the company, and there's options for him. So I think when things cool down, I think they'll revisit working with Kurt Angle.
It's true. It's true. I have nothing to say for that. I don't want to see him work more than one or two dates a year. That's about where I'd want to see him. I don't want to see him doing the Shawn Michaels schedule. I just want to see him maybe once or twice a year.
No, he can't. And I would say the same with Goldberg. I mean, he should be put into a bit – if you're going to do something with him, I mean, neither of these guys need to be coming back and be performers every week. Their specialness is much like an Undertaker. It's to build to like a dream scenario of that sort. And there's – definitely interest, I think, in seeing either of those performers come back at this point. I think anything more is just it's asking too much at this point of these two.
So I don't know if you had a chance to hear Dave Bautista with Greeny on the Writers Room free podcast on MLW Radio, but he spoke rather openly, candidly, about his time at WWE and looking at the last run, 2014 and everything. What was your take on that?
Well, I've not heard the show as of yet.
Way to support us here.
I've been a busy man, Court.
But, I know. Canada Day's coming up. You got big plans.
I would say, though, if you were ranking the three of likely or unlikely to be back in the WWE with Goldberg and Angle, are you telling me that Dave Bautista would definitely be number three in your rankings?
I don't see how he or why he would right now. Yeah, he's got,
it sounds like he has no desire to.
It's too bad, too, because he loves the business, and that's the place to go if you're Dave Bautista. But if you don't have a good experience somewhere and you have a great opportunity to make a lot of money and do a lot of things and be famous and hang out with Chris Pratt, I'd probably go that route, too, and just shrug it off.
Now, was this in this interview, this was where he had stated that Hunter and Stephanie essentially laughed off if Guardians of the Galaxy was even going to be a good movie, much less something they would promote?
Yeah, sort of, yeah.
All right, well, people will have to listen to it for the full context, but Guardians of the Galaxy turned out okay for the guy.
Well, hey, listen, raccoon movies, usually big box office.
Well, it was a pretty big movie in 2014.
Yes, it was.
It was that year's Conjuring 2.
Just maybe not quite that. I'll tell you this. I think there was a lot of skepticism about how that movie was going to do in 2014. I think people were like, well, I don't know. There's this talking raccoon or an outer space. It's not Star Wars. This might be the one where Marvel screws this thing up. And that movie was maybe my favorite Marvel movie of all time. Great soundtrack. Maybe the best movie soundtrack of a long time. It's a great movie. It was a great turn by Dave Bautista, but everyone did a great job at that movie. So yeah, it was a huge movie. And, actually part two of the Dave Bautista podcast, just dropped. It's VIP only, but he talks about the sequel that's coming out next year. They just finished shooting it. So he talks a little bit about Guardians 2. And for those Blade Runner fans, the Harrison Ford movie, classic movie from the 80s, he talks a little bit about the sequel, which is something he's going to be doing, which is another huge movie. Again, it's like, even if he wanted to go back, I don't know. I don't see it. You know, it's just his schedule. It's like, it's pretty packed. But one of the things he mentioned at one of those shows, I don't know if it's the VIP or free one, but he talks about like he had pitched coming back for SummerSlam, and like I think about him coming back at the peak of that movie, how big of a star he would have been. And this is not a guy he wasn't like oh man, I don't want to lose. He would have put over someone probably, or done something really cool, and he would have gotten WWE a cool factor. But so often in wrestling, so often is the case that timing is everything, and the fate it boils down to ego, creative, and money. And you know, clearly things didn't jive for him and WWE on that 2014 SummerSlam run, which, you know, a company always needs star power. Now more than ever, you'd think they would want a Dave Bautista somehow affiliated with them, for not all just the perks you get from all the success he's had, but for the brand split. I mean, they're calling everyone, man. I don't know if they've called Wei Ting. I'm sure they saw the Grapple Kingdom 1 footage, and they're going to book him any moment on NXT at the very least. But they need stars. They need talent.
Yeah, I think he balked at a Legends deal.
Wow. Well, yeah. It's probably the right move, man. You don't want to just take the first deal. You got to wait and play it out. It's a game of poker.
Did you notice on Monday night, they did promote John Cena hosting the ESPY Awards, which they called, you know, ESPN's annual awards. Mm-hmm. But it was very notable that they did not plug what network it would be airing on next month. There was no mention of ABC.
Well, sometimes it's by design. Sometimes it just something gets lost in the translation of the copy. And sorry, I wouldn't look into it too much. They've done a lot of work.
I look into everything too closely, Court. That's why I am who I am. Do you know that the ESPYs are also going head to head with the Cruiserweight Classic?
No, I didn't.
Well, that's going to wrap up this week's edition of Bauer and Pollock. Are we doing a show next week, Court?
We'll see how you're doing. If you're a little too frisky, I might take a powder.
I'm going to be in Las Vegas next week.
Oh, my God. Will you be sober for a show?
Are you kidding? Do you know how much work that is going on? There are three UFC cards next week.
I understand that you're the Hunter S. Thompson of MMA journalism.
Well, you heard wrong,
that's why you are who you are. Vegas.
So that is all for us. Me and Court might be done forever, actually.
Yeah,
we may
done.
Never, ever
That's
do
it.
A show again. We will see. But, Court, what are you doing this weekend for Independence Day? Are you going to be sitting back and listening to yourself on MLW Radio?
I will be sitting by the ocean eating hot dogs and watching the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest, which is always a lot of fun and disturbing at the same time.
Is Mick Foley in this year's?
I didn't know he was had any plans to be. Is that something that he has a desire to do?
There's a massive controversy when he entered this thing.
I had no idea about any of that.
It probably is a different hot dog eating contest.
Oh.
Now that I think about it. But go on. You're going to be eating hot dogs.
Yes.
And by the water.
Yeah.
And
getting sunburnt and probably being buried alive by my children in sand. So that's basically my fate this weekend.
It was the wing bowl. Mick Foley was booted from the wing bowl for cheating, not the hot dog eating contest. So
no, this is more rep. There's an actual championship title for this one.
Yeah, I know. This airs on ESPN, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. It airs on the 4th of July live in the around 1 o'clock usually on the 4th of July. And that's a great, you come in for lunch, cool off, watch that, lose your appetite, go back outside and enjoy yourself.
Well, up here in Canada, we work on Monday because it's not a holiday for us. But instead,
that sucks.
We get Friday off, so it's all the same. Up at liveaudiowrestling.com, you can check out one of our 255,000 shows that dropped this week, including a review of the 2002 King of the Ring, which was quite the month in WWE history. You had the brand split in its early stages. Steve Austin had left the company. The Rock was back. Vince Russo essentially walked in and out of the WWE headquarters in the span of 24 hours. You had John Cena's debut, the debut of TNA. It's a crazy time period going on. And then everyone descended upon Columbus, Ohio for the King of the Ring. So we got a review of that. And then Sunday night on The Law, 11 Eastern time, we will be chatting with Bill Goldberg about his deal with 2K, the passing of Kimbo Slice, Mark Hunt taking on Brock Lesnar, and some of other Bill's projects that he has going on. So you can check that out on Sunday night. Listen live at liveaudiowrestling.com. Myself and Court, we're going to plan to be back next week, but never assume anything in this world of wrestling podcasts, because it's always an interesting world as we all seek out to find whatever we are looking for. That's going to wrap it up. Follow him at Court Bauer. I am John Pollock. Happy Canada Day. Happy Independence Day. And for those of you outside of Canada and the U.S., just have a happy weekend.